And so this is starting.
Okay.
Hello, and welcome to Nate's Look at Life, a perspective on grief, loss, and the past 2 years with the COVID pandemic. I am here with my wonderful professor, and if you want to introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Tom Lobaugh. I didn't know I was wonderful. Thank you.
And Tom, if you could speak on some of your experience or what your perspective is in terms of grief and your experience here.
Yeah, thank you. Part of my perspective is helping people recognize the symptoms of grief and also work through them. I'm a grief counselor as well as a professor here, and some of those things that I've learned over the years is been to watch for certain nonverbals that are telling a different story than what their words might be saying. So sometimes we'll walk into a situation and everyone will usually ask, so how are you doing, to the person who might be grieving. Oh, I'm fine, things are okay. Oh, I'm sad. You know, there are certain, you know, always these sort of, at least North American context, pieces to we learn to share those responses. But then there's always a vacant look, sometimes in people's eyes, and they may cut off thoughts and ideas and move to a smile. And that to me is something that is not being very congruent with the situation, especially if they're saying one thing and their faces are, you know, maybe saying another, tight-lipped, withdrawn. There's sometimes a full body posture, crossed arms, crossed legs, and just sort of distant. And that those are signs that I think are, at least from my perspective, people are doing, going through either trying to cope or figure things out. And it always depends on how soon, you know, the loss has been, you know, if it's, if people are still trying to put their world together, if it's in the first 2 to 3 weeks, usually things are pretty congruent. You know, how are you doing or what's going on? And they might not really say anything, just stare off. And that, yeah, anyway. It depends on the month and the, you know, wherever they are in the grieving process. And for every single individual, it's radically, radically different. There was never one form of grief. There are a lot of different patterns, and but they hit at all different times and lots of different ways.
Certainly. And that's something we've hit on in this podcast, and just being able to realize that that is very individual for different people. One of those recent developments has been, I'm not sure if you know of this, but prolonged grief disorder.
Yeah.
And being able to see just that automatic timestamp of, okay, you need to get over it, or, you know, this is what is expected. It's not supposed to be a certain thing. And in terms of, you know, those 5 steps of how you're supposed to grieve or what that looks like for each person, it can be so radically different. But being able to know those, not always telltale signs, but just reading people and how they can, you know, not always be saying what they're feeling, what they're saying. There's a lot of context and things that go beyond that.
And grief, for at least from my perspective, is so unique and so profound, and so it's so much. It's so, there's just so much there. I don't know how to say this. It's just incredibly overwhelming. And we don't give people enough time to work through that, and that for some, maybe 6 months. You know, for others, It could be 3 to 4 years while they're really trying to cope with the loss of someone that they love so much. My favorite book that a medical doctor gave me, because I thought it was losing my mind when my mom died, and I was just had all these thoughts and was wanting to still talk to her and all of that. And the book is It's Okay That You're Not Okay.
Yep.
And I just love that book and have encouraged others to read it. But in that, for me, created that understanding that everyone goes through it individually. And then when you go through some loss, that kind of loss, you're really more aware of the person who's sitting in silence, right? Even though they might have a smile, or there's always something else that's going on,
As much as we have, a face that we put on or a cover to our book, there's a lot more that's going on inside, and being able to realize who's withdrawn, or like, that's one of the things that I've appreciated about your class, and just being able to not pick on certain students, but being able to realize those nonverbals and who's withdrawn or who's going through something else, and being able to have that acceptance for who people are, but being able to also have that awareness and have that sincere desire and kindness, and being able to meet people where they are at, because we are all humans and we are all going through this, certain experience. And these last 2 years have been hard for many people. And just being able to realize that loss and how people deal with that in different ways, and how, it's not always loss of a certain person, but being able to recognize, loss of stability, whether that's a job or a house, or just the normal same old, or progression through life, like we all do it. And we're wrapping up high school, or wrapping up college, or wrapping up all these different things, or heading into marriages, or heading into troubled things, or any of this different stuff.
And it's interesting to me to see that when we've looked at COVID, and there are some that are really experiencing a loss of college life. Mm-hmm. A lot of professors have gone through a sense of loss, and I would say grief, because they don't have their colleagues around all the time. Mm-hmm. When we got back on campus and we could take some of the masks off and all that's been happening, I mean, I've been stunned at how many times people don't know how to reconnect again, because it's like seeing someone who's come back from the dead. It's like, where have you been? Mm-hmm. We can send you an email, and I don't Zoom you as often, right? As even the students, and there are others. So what I meant to say, the other juxtaposition is, well, we should just get over it. You're just, it is just college, or it is, it's only just been a couple of years, and I don't
that's
know.
That's a profound loss of an experience.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, I totally agree. And I think we don't want to get stuck someplace. There was a bit maybe slower movement in terms of helping students cope. It's funny. One of the decisions to stay teaching face to face was so that I could keep consistency with students over the COVID deal. And as long as Boise State had a very good Let's Stay Healthy plan, which I think they did. It's been fascinating to teach face-to-face in the midst of the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I think for the students, too, who came, it was, even we had to sit 20 feet apart or whatever it was. Anyway, I don't know. But I made one of those choices because I didn't want to have that loss. I personally just didn't want to lose that. And I think that's okay,
And that's a grief of a loss of, that normal, or, kind of the before times, the after times. Like, there's definitely a realization of like, okay, things are, aren't going to be normal, or this is, a change. And then things, didn't really change, or, you know, things have changed slowly, and now we're, you know, back into this, you know, new adjustment, and that, you know, brings the whole troubles of those last 2 years back, you know, to realization, okay, we have to parse through this, or, you know, we have to, you know, realize just where we're at and where we're going at this point too, you know, both as individuals and as, you know, society, or, you know, going forward of what's expected. So certainly interesting. And
it's interesting to me that the way we might have the graduation or gone through the things that we've done, or we've been able to have classes online, whatever it means, whatever that adjustment was, there still is loss because of the change.
Yep, certainly.
I think Boise State did an okay job of providing some services that we're willing to call it mental health. You know, to let's look at grief or what this sense of loss and what it may be doing to students. A couple of classes, I just sort of gave up on the lecture and just said, how are you all coping? What's going on? And students were able to talk to each other and talk, and then talk out loud in class. And I mean, it was quite a lively discussion, and people were really frustrated, and other people were just really glad to talk and not have to talk to a computer screen. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Lovely.
Yeah. What else?
As for what's helped you the best in terms of grief and working through that, whatever that may be, you know, just being able to be present and aware, what would you say that is for you?
Yeah. What do you mean for me?
What activities or what thought processes or what adjustments to how you went about your day made those days easier?
I think realizing that I was not okay. And when I was going through my own personal grief, and I still grieve my mom's loss, and, you know, we had a great relationship, and it was also bizarre, you know, it was what it was, and she wasn't the best mom in the world, and even grieving the fact that I missed some of those worst parts, you know, she would be, well, I won't say that, but that's, and realizing that I'm okay, and sitting in a chair, whatever it is I'm doing, feeling that, and whether it was waves or whether it was just something, I didn't turn on a radio and it, you know, it'd be one of her favorite songs or something that reminded us. And so that individual, just sit with it, being present, being aware of the fact that I really miss her and that it was okay to even say, hey, Mom, I miss you today, you know. One of the funniest things she said, and we never understood it, where she would say to me, and she would say to my brother, and she'd say to my dad, and then she said to Kathy, and then she said to our kids, consistently, once or twice a month, she would just say, you know, you're going to miss me when I'm gone. And so this ingrained teaching all these years, right, I just laugh every time I say, you know, I miss you, you know.
You were right, yes.
And I get it, I do miss you. And also the tragedy of the fact that we never stopped in a moment to go, of course we're going to miss you, Mom. We never affirmed that with her. You know, she was searching, she was asking, she was pushing, and she was teaching and letting us know, and she was grumpy, and why aren't you paying attention to me, and, you know, where am I in your life, and that, or she would say, what am I, just chopped liver, and, you know, that kind of silly interaction. But it's just really good to sit with whatever the fucking grief is, you know, whatever it is, and nobody understands it around you, and that's okay too. Nobody understands it. You got to be tough for yourself, and you just got to be present with it. And after all these years, I'm still find myself, you know, wow, you know, there are still these moments. You know, we haven't been able to pull ourselves together enough to go do what she wanted us to do, scatter her ashes on Mount Lemmon in Arizona. And we haven't been able to do that as a family. And Kathy's not real sure about when to do that. And we've just, her, it's the funniest thing. Her ashes are in the kitchen. They're in a cupboard. Kathy knows where they are. I know where they are. The kids don't. And that's okay, because they, I think I'm a little worried that they might think we're weird, but we're dead. Yeah. And it's got a her pair of glasses and sunglasses that are still there. And so every now and then. And Kathy's okay with saying, "Hey, Sharon," you know, every now and then, you know, that kind of acknowledgement that we're being present with the grief psychologically, present with the grief spiritually. You know, I think when my mom went to heaven, the first thing she did was punch St. Peter in the face. I'm thinking she wanted more time. Mm-hmm. This is not the right time, you know, that kind of thing. At least that's what my imagination allows me to do. So
for sure.
Anyway. And then what I've learned to deal with my own stuff is I've also been able to sit with others in a way that just lets them be as well. And when the nonverbals start showing up, then I can start asking questions. We did a pre-grief visit, and my boss had to sign off, you know, as he's making sure I'm a grief counselor and doing all the things that he needed to do and all that stuff. And we walked into a situation where a 70-year-old son is trying to take care of his 95-year-old mom in a trailer situation. And it's really tough for them. They're on food stamps and all kinds of things. You know, Meals on Wheels, everything is it's just really, really difficult. And when others have gone in, it's been very uncomfortable. But they talk. And my boss talked. And everybody else talked. And they talked to the lady and, you know, the poor woman who's dying, and they ask how she's doing and all that kind of stuff. And they ask the son, and, you know, then they got the dog involved, and so they had to fill this empty space. And when I went back for my final, so to speak, I just sat quietly, and I gave the guy a heads up. I said, "I think I'm just follow my lead, whatever, just let it be." So I was quiet for about 7.5 minutes. The son was a nervous wreck, but then he calmed down. And then the mom, for the first time, spoke, and a lot of them were saying, "Oh, we didn't even, we wouldn't, they never gave her a chance." Anyway, just being quiet and being present, just being quiet and present with people who are grieving, allow them the space to engage you when they don't, and sometimes they don't want, you know? When a grief counselor shows up or somebody with a collar, right, everyone's like, "Oh, dude, I'm dying, you know, I don't want to be reminded of that, you know?" And so it's really cool, I think, at least what I've learned, is to be silent and to let them be the first ones to make that move. And non-verbally, 95-year-old woman did this, her invite, she was sitting on the bed, and then she leaned in, rubbed her leg twice, like that, which I took as she was prepping something. Well, she did that twice, and then she cleared her throat. And I said, "Hi, Mary. It's not nice to meet you." "Well, I don't know why God's got me here still, you know." That's one of the things I've learned, and it's uncomfortable as heck, you know, but it allows people an opportunity to be them in that moment, even if they don't want you to be there. That's okay too.
Yeah.
Honoring is another word I use. Mm-hmm. I want to honor that space.
Just one final question. What would you say, you've used humor and like you consider, you know, one of your, you know, you can speak on humor and sports performance or, you know, what your research there, like that.
Sure.
That area, like, what do you think humor and grief have in connection? Like, what toss you that one, but out of the blue.
There is not a lot of research on humor and grief. Not a lot of steady, really good. There are people that are doing grief stuff that allow places of humor and have been surprising and very helpful and good. A lot of people think grief and humor do not go at all. I think Meggert, Sadie Meggert, her book on the workplace, choosing the human perspective. Phenomenal idea of being able to choose a human perspective, right, in a space, right? And so I've been able to work on that and apply some of that with the people that were grieving. So there, I think there is a fantastic space for humor, and there is the flexibility to risk being funny in what might not be a very funny situation. Mm-hmm. And it depends on the context.
Yeah. is it worth that risk? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it always depends on the context. And just for example, I was a couple of days ago, maybe it was last week, I was on to visit a family, again, whose mom was actively dying. The family didn't know what to do, and they were just distraught. And the son, who was being the gatekeeper, you know, I said, I'm a grief counselor, I'm here to help, what can I do? And they, I have a belly, right? Mm-hmm. He had a belly too. And it was a very small door getting into this double wide. And he kept saying, you know, come in, come in. And I was like, okay. I was trying to help him be like, I don't want to be bumping bellies, and I don't want to be awkward and be the guy that's like, oop, I'm stumbling in because, and he was thinking 100 different things. So he tried to step out of the way, and then that's when I made the move. But then he came back in to hold the door, and we met right smack in the middle, both of our bellies, bam, and our faces were super close to each other. And he didn't know what to do. He was absolutely mortified. We both banged against the door, and everybody else looked at us, and it was everything I didn't want it to be. It scared the daylights out of the woman in her bed. She jumped and said something, and everybody's like, "What's going on?" And I said, "Jose, we have got to stop meeting like this." And he was like, "That's not funny." He didn't know what to do with that. And then he just laughed. He burst out laughing. And he had a really weird laugh. Not like, ha, ha, ha. He had a really high-pitched, squeaky laugh. And it was infectious, because everybody knows Jose to be that way sometimes. It was magnificent. It a huge learning for me. And glad that I was on my game enough to go, this is okay. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to do something with us. Mm-hmm. We can be funny and humorous. And anyway, that's just a, and I think there are always those choices. You can have that perspective. There is that. If you're aware of it and you're going in, there may be something. And I've found that the person who's actively dying or in that space is usually one that has the best sense of humor out of anybody. Mm-hmm. And it's been, at least I would say, sometimes I give myself a better grade than I should. Even if it's 70%, 7 out of the 10 of the patients that I work with and move in to do something at bedside, that we'll talk about grief and where they're going, they usually have something funny to say. Mm-hmm. Something really funny to, or I'll be able to say something funny. Like, there's a guy that bought a house 2 years ago right next to the funeral home, like in the parking lot of the funeral home. And when I went to visit him, I couldn't help. How can you not say something? You know? But I didn't know how uptight they might be. I don't know if there was a land. You know, you don't know what's going on. So you just sort of say, well, you know. I noticed that the funeral home's right there. He's like, yep. He just led with this amazing thing. I told my daughters, they can, as soon as I die, they can just wheel me right across the street. And I thought, that's the funniest damn thing I've heard all day. So, yeah.
And it's just interesting to make light of those darker moments, but just, you know, they can be, and you know, it has an impact. But being able to look at it in a different light, or being able to, you know, make the most out of the situations that we do have, we're able to, you know, have a bigger impact than we think. So certainly thank you for having the impact that you did over the course of this semester, and being able to, you know, have, you know, nonverbal, and being able to see those different things. So certainly appreciate that and being able to have you on.
Thank you, man. It's an honor to be asked and to be a participate with you today.
Of course.
Very cool.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Yeah, anytime. How fun.
Have you done a podcast previously at all, or what was?
Yeah, a couple of.